Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here in the Bettors Box. It's the BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for April 20th. I am your host, Adam Burke. Happy to have you with me here as I'm going to give you all kinds of baseball betting insight and analysis to help you today and throughout the weekend. This segment, of course, just like everything else on Bang the Book Radio, is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTB Radio. It's good for a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. As you know already, we're doing the Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format of Bang the Book Radio. Monday, we'll have the Monday mailbag and also the Bettors Box. If you have any Monday mailbag questions, please reach out on Twitter. I'm at Skating Tripods. That's going to be the best way to get your questions out to me. Tuesday, of course, we'll have our Tuesday takeover show. And then Thursdays, like today, just straight up the Bettors Box to give you that baseball betting insight. Head on over to BangTheBook.com. Take advantage of all the great written content that's going up over there. I, of course, have my picks and analysis piece every day. Daily fantasy tips as well. I write up golf, NASCAR, NHL. We also have a lot of people doing some stuff for the NFL draft. We've got NBA, other baseball writers that do some stuff for us over there. So lots of tremendous content at BangTheBook.com. Please take advantage of that. And, of course, you can apply that as well to the three contests that we have going on over there at the website. We've got our daily streaker contest, our monthly pick of the day, and then our also some monthly cash prizes for the top win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. Bear with me a little bit here on today's show. These allergies are still kicking my ass a little bit, hoping to get rid of these here over the course of the weekend. We'll go ahead and start with a look beyond the box score. We'll also go down the lines on today's show. I'll talk a sabermetric stat in the interest of time with a little bit of a late start to today's show. No daily fantasy tip, but I'll give you my pick for tonight and then also a look ahead to the weekend. So we'll dig beyond the box score a little bit here. Talk about the series between the Oakland Athletics and the Texas Rangers. Oakland takes 2 out of 3 in this series. Look, people, it's April 20th, and the Texas Rangers have not won a game in which they've scored fewer than 7 runs this season. In fact, they've also lost one of those. So the Rangers off to a very, very bad start. And one of the reasons why, as far as I'm concerned, is the makeup and the mindset of this Texas Rangers offense. So they saw 160 total pitches on Monday. Jarrell Cotton had some problems with his control, wound up walking 5 while he was out there. But the Rangers were patient. They waited back. They took some pitches. They did some damage on some pitches when they were ahead in the count. But then you look at Tuesday and Wednesday, they only saw 111 pitches on Tuesday, 121 pitches on Wednesday, fifth highest swing percentage in Major League Baseball right now at 47%, the third highest chase rate, but they're just 12th in zone swing percentage, which means they're 12th in swinging at pitches that are in the strike zone as defined by PitchFX. So when I look at this Texas Rangers team, you know, look, they have pitching problems. We already know that. The back of this rotation is very, very bad. It's very top-heavy with Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, who are both solid, but the back end of the rotation is poor. The bullpen is obviously very poor, as we've seen so far. And then this offense, very undisciplined, too aggressive. This is just a very beatable team right now. And when you look at last year, you saw some of these signs. They were able to hide some of them because they were so good in one-run games. That hasn't been the case here this season. And the Rangers are a team that are – they're a fade team for me right now. You know, in a lot of cases, you can find spot plays with some of their worst starting pitchers. But, you know, for me, I don't see anything I like a whole lot about this offense. Now, that being said, Oakland, who's about a 500 team right now, there are some signs with them as well that are a little bit concerning. Right now, they're without Marcus Semien. Defensively, that's an upgrade for them to use Adam Rosales out there. The bullpen has been very good. But some strange lineup constructions. I thought Monday's lineup against A.J. Griffin was one of the worst that's been trotted out all season long. They're also due for a little bit of regression. Team BABIP against of 248. We're starting to see a lot of these numbers normalize. I've been talking about the Minnesota Twins, what's been going on with them. Well, in 2 games in that series against Cleveland, their team BABIP against went up about 40 points. And a lot of that had to do with Philip Hughes. On Tuesday night's game, Wednesday, of course, rained out. It doesn't take long for these things to normalize and for teams to fall into the range that we're going to expect to see throughout the season. There will still be an outlier or two, and you know, right now Oakland, one of those in terms of BABIP against the Twins, still at 233, an outlier as well. But these things are going to normalize, and they're going to normalize very quickly, because when you talk about large-scale team statistics at this stage of the game. You know, we're seeing teams that have played, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 games with 35 to, you know, 40 plate appearances against per game. That's a sample size that starts to become a little bit significant. So as we look at those outliers, you can see on a team basis, those outliers are going to come back to the mean, come back to the normal ranges. So if you do get some of those that stick out, like a BABIP against, for example, you know, it's probably a team that you can look to, you know, either play, you know, the opposing team total under. If it's somebody that has a really high BABIP, like the Indians, for example, they have the highest BABIP against in baseball. You know, the Twins, we saw the team total overcast for the Indians on Tuesday night. You know, I think defensively, Minnesota is going to regress. So those things are out there. Again, it's very easy to find that data, all of it over at FanGraphs. You can sort by the column headers. Really, really good stuff over there. And, of course, I'll keep bringing some things up here on the show as well. So the St. Louis Cardinals had a good first part of the week. They swept the Pittsburgh Pirates all three games, ending in a score of 2-1. This is something I think we can expect to see here from the Pittsburgh Pirates going forward. We knew offensively it was going to be a challenge without Younho Gong. Andrew McCutchen is dropping off. Gregory Polanco has been hurt a little bit. They have some problems offensively. Now you add in the PED suspension for Starling Marte, who will miss the next 80 games and the playoffs if Pittsburgh somehow makes a way to get there, or makes finds out a way, I should say, to get there. This is a twofold loss for the Pirates, because Marte is a guy very capable of hitting at the top of the order, tremendous offensive skill set, decent power, good speed, good extra base power if he's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But also they moved him to center field because Andrew McCutchen was just so bad out there last season. Now for the Pirates, they face the decision of, do we play McCutchen out there? Do we try to move somebody else there? You know, Gregory Polanco is a decent outfielder, but does he have the range to play center? Probably not with the ongoing knee issues that he has. So the Pirates are in a pretty big state of disarray right now. 2-17 with runners in scoring position in that series against the Cardinals. And what's really challenging for Pittsburgh is that the Cardinals had 7 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in that series and still swept it. Some really good starting pitching performances here in this series. Ivan Nova, complete game loss in game one. Chad Cole pitched very well, 6 innings, 2 runs on 3 hits, walked 1, struck out 3. Garrett Cole, 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, couple of walks, 8 strikeouts, 2 Dexter Fowler home runs. The difference in that series finale there on Wednesday. Lance Lynn for the Cardinals, 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Mike Leake, 6 1/3, 7 hits, 1 run, no walks and a strikeout. Michael Wacha, 6 2/3, 4 hits, 1 run, couple walks, 3 strikeouts. So the starting pitchers for the Cardinals here in this series only gave up 2 combined runs, but they also only had 9 combined strikeouts. So the Cardinals, a team carrying a pretty good BABIP against right now. They're a decent defensive team, but I would probably look for some regression in that area as well. And if the Cardinals don't start hitting, which has been a problem for them, things are going to keep being a struggle. You know, the bullpen is starting to figure things out. They're settling into their roles. But it's very hard to back either one of these teams right now. You know, like I said, I think I've seen some things I like from Mike Leake, some things I like from Michael Wacha. We're seeing the market come in against the Cardinals here today with Carlos Martinez on the mound. Can't back Pittsburgh in any scenario. The NL Central is a big-time challenge right now. You know, the Brewers are hovering around 500. The Cubs are doing the same. The Pirates and the Cardinals, I think, are both 6-9 right now. The Reds really stand out, but they're a team where regression's coming for them. Not a very good division here in the NL Central, but you know what we oftentimes see is that early in the year, these teams play each other a lot because weather is hit or miss. MLB wants to be able to reschedule games pretty easily. So we see a front-loaded and a back-loaded schedule with division games. Now some of these teams in the NL Central are going to start playing a lot of games outside of the division. And when you talk about the inconsistency of these teams, maybe you can find some opportunities to go against the Pirates, Cardinals, Cubs, those types of teams. I'll talk about the Cubs here in a minute. You know, these are all public teams because of the success they've had in recent years. And a lot of people are just going to take it for granted and say, well, you know, the Cubs will be better. The Cardinals will be better. The Pirates will be better. Of course, maybe not so much with the Pirates now with some of the news stories with them here recently. But the Cubs and Cardinals, teams where perception and reality may be very, very different here as they play some of those non-divisional games in the months of May and June. Again, just some long-term things that you want to keep in mind. The Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Brewers here in that series. The poor Milwaukee Brewers, they scored 17 runs in this series and still lost 2 of 3. The Neftali Feliz blown save on Wednesday, playing a big role there with that. Eric Thames is just on fire. 408 average, 500 on base, 959 slugging percentage. He saw 34 pitches in his 5 plate appearances on Wednesday. So the Brewers' offense is, you know, it's been interesting. It's basically been what I expected, and that's with Keon Broxton not doing a whole lot here at this stage of the game. The Cubs, they're getting their offense going a little bit. However, some major red flags coming out of this series here for the Chicago Cubs, beginning with Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks now has a 6.19 ERA on the season, command and control both dropping off. His swinging strike rate from 10% to 6.9%. It was 10% last year, below 7% this year. Again, it's early. Pitchers are still fighting with their command a little bit. But for Kyle Hendricks here, the margin for error is pretty thin for him. He does not throw hard. He needs to get ahead so he can use that changeup, induce weak contact. He hasn't been getting ahead enough. Been walking some guys. He had 4 walks and 5 innings in that game against the Brewers yesterday. That's a problem. I talked about John Lackey as a guy to go against. If you win against him in game 1 of this series, that was a winner for you on the Brewers. You know, Brett Anderson, not much command in the middle game of this series. What is it for the Cubs? Is it a workload problem? Is it some defensive drop-offs, which are certainly something that we could come to expect here this season? You know, what is it? I don't know necessarily, but I'm going to be watching this very, very closely because Jake Arrieta is a guy that had some drop-off last season. He's pitched well at the outset of this year. I think John Lester is okay, but the Cubs have some problems right now. And they have plenty of time to figure it out. There's no doubt about that. There's a ton of season left. They're coming off the World Series. They've had, you know, lots of fanfare on this homestand and all that type of thing. But they're starting pitchers. I'm seeing some red flags very early on here. And those are things I'm going to pay close attention to as we keep moving forward. Excuse me. So let's take a look down the lines here and talk about some line moves that have happened since we were last on the air on Monday. Monday, really the only notable move was the situational spot move on the Seattle Mariners. I talked about that one. That was Monday's pick. So I don't know if it was the market coming in on the situations or maybe the bettors box is moving lines. Maybe all of you out there doing your best to be influential out there in the marketplace. But in any event, that was a fairly significant move seeing money come in on Ariel Miranda, a guy that you wouldn't expect to see steam on. But again, the situational spot there was really, really perfect. Tuesday, we saw a big move on Luis Severino and the Yankees to fade Miguel Gonzalez and the White Sox. Look, I've told you this. Miguel Gonzalez is an underrated pitcher in my mind. Sometimes all it takes is some arsenal changes, you know, getting a pitching coach like Don Cooper. He's been really good dating back to last year. I don't know how sustainable it is because, you know, this is a guy who throughout his career has had some problems, but if you can catch him in plus 160, plus 170 like you could on Tuesday, I totally think it's worth a shot. Saw some adjustments for Marcus Stroman going up against the relatively unknown Brian Johnson in the Red Sox-Jays game. Red Sox wound up winning that one 8-7. Also saw some money come in on Zach Wheeler. He was taking on Zach Eflin. That number opened minus 155. It wound up being up in the 190 or 200 range. Prices on Zach Wheeler are entirely too high right now. They are just way too high. And look, the ball's coming out clean. The Mets have a good rotation, but and I would never lay 190 or 200 with Zach Wheeler. And if you faded that on Tuesday, you had a little bit of success there in that situation. Saw a Michael Fulmer fade on Tuesday for the Detroit Tigers. Money came in on Tampa Bay. Look, Michael Fulmer has signs of regression. I will completely agree with that. However, this is why it's hard to just bet on blind regression. A lot of people, as I've talked about before, like to bet on those guys, low ERA, high xFIP. High ERA, low xFIP, and just do so blindly. You can't do that. There are exceptions to the rule. Michael Fulmer is one of them. Fulmer has that Marco Estrada-esque arsenal where great changeup, exceptional changeup command, fastball that isn't the hardest thing in the world, but it's got a good spin rate to it, can spin off the barrel, can, you know, sort of have some higher perceived velocity. So, yeah, he's a guy where there are some of those signs if you look strictly at the numbers, but you also have to apply context. I cannot stress this enough. context is so very important. With a guy like Fulmer, when you've got a plus-plus changeup and a fastball with good command, you can outpitch some of those regression signs, like a low BABIP, like the lower ERA and the high XFIP. Fulmer is that type of guy. So again, I think blindly fading somebody like him just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The price was still too high on Hyunjin Ryu in Tuesday's Dodgers game. I don't get it. You know, another one like Zach Wheeler, where, you know, this isn't a guy that's going to come right back to his peak form right away. And I don't even know if Ryu ever will. I don't know if Zach Wheeler ever will. But these prices are just too high on these guys. You know, maybe it had to do with the Eflin thing in the Phillies-Mets game. Maybe it had to do with, I believe, Kyle Freeland pitched that game for Colorado against Ryu. You know, an unknown commodity. And yeah, I get it. But these guys with long injury backgrounds, you just can't blindly follow them at these high prices. If anything, I would blindly fade them at these high prices. I think you're going to come ahead more often than not, especially here early in the season. Shelby Miller opened an underdog at Petco Park against Jared Cozart and the Padres. Not a good line there. That line wound up closing about minus 120, minus 125 in the Diamondbacks, and it was an easy winner there. A Yovani Gallardo fade on Tuesday. Look, I wanted to play this game. I have no faith in Yovani Gallardo. But the situational spot for Miami was really, really bad. As I talked about, that second game generally tends to be the one where, you know, the players say it's harder to get over that hump. But Yovani Gallardo is just that bad. And, of course, the Mariners did nothing against Wee and Chen and the Marlins bullpen there in that one. All right, so let's look at Wednesday. So on Wednesday, we saw money come in on Michael Wacha against the Pirates. This was one of the early games there on Wednesday. This was a fade of Gerrit Cole. And I want to point out something that listener John Roy 5807 very astutely pointed out, was that Gerrit Cole had a very high workload in his previous start. I went, double-checked the data there. It was actually a career-high pitches thrown, I believe it was against Chicago, for Gerrit Cole in his previous start. Now, it's early. You know, it's mid-April when this start had taken place. Cole, a guy with arm problems last year, made no sense for Clint Hurdle to push Gerrit Cole the way that he did. But he did. John Roy pointed out to me that he wanted to look to fade Cole, at least in the first five in this start, and it worked. You know, now, like I cautioned him, Gerrit Cole has gotten no run support in the first five innings. He's now 0-4 in the first five in his four starts. He's gotten no run support. I think he's gotten four combined runs in those four starts. But, hey, if you want to look for those situations where guys do have a high workload and look to fade them coming into their next start, I think it's probably a profitable angle for you to look at. He mentioned John Lester being a guy. The difference with Lester, of course, is that he has more experience, more of a background with this, and didn't have the arm problems last year. But if you find a guy, I'm thinking maybe like an Aaron Nola type, to where the season was cut a little bit short, goes out there, max effort, throws 110, 115, 120 pitches. Yeah, I think maybe a first five fade or a full game fade, something that you can look at there heading into the next start. Also, one quick note on Gerrit Cole here while I'm talking about him. He leads Major League Baseball in exit velocity of 95 or higher on batted balls this season. So the command is not there for him. Swinging strike rate's not there for him. Gerrit Cole may be a guy that I look to fade overall here in this season. I don't know if it's an elbow problem. I don't know if he's just not finishing his pitches. But Gerrit Cole is a guy I will take with a massive grain of salt here in his coming starts. Slight fade of Felix Hernandez. I didn't agree with that move. Hernandez was not very good. But Edinson Volquez was in much bad shape, or much worse shape, I should say, in that start there against the Mariners. Day game after a night game for the Marlins out on the West Coast. Not a good situational spot. I get that Felix isn't the pitcher that he once was. But again, it seems to me like some of the people that are moving the prices out there in the marketplace, they're strictly numbers plays. And I'm not going to belittle how anybody goes about their business, but there's a lot more context to it than that. And I think sometimes that gets a little bit lost. Saw some Rick Porcello money come in against Francisco Liriano in that game last night. Porcello's third in batted balls of 95 miles per hour or higher, so the guy's been hit hard. I've been telling you he's a fade guy in my mind. From an ERA standpoint, he hasn't been that bad just yet, but look at the context. He's been getting hit very, very hard. So I think I'm on the right track there with looking to fade him. Saw some Jason Vargas money come in for the Royals against the Giants. I was surprised to see Madison Bumgarner go from minus 140 to minus 125. Bumgarner pitched fine. Giants didn't score for him. Seems like Vargas might be one of those flavor of the month guys early on here, because there's no reason to back the Royals at this point. Offensively, they're just atrocious. But people back them there in that spot against Bumgarner. We'll have to see what happens going forward. But seeing some article love for Jason Vargas right now, you know, looked good in his first few starts last year before injuries shut him down again. Looks good here at the outset. When you start to get that hype train rolling on some guys that don't deserve it, you can generally look to find some value going against those guys. Clayton Kershaw was a minus 335 favorite at open for the Dodgers against the Rockies. That number closed around minus 250. Look, man, he's Clayton Kershaw. He's just damn good. You know, I mean, you don't make a lot of money looking to fade Clayton Kershaw. I'll just say that. So let's look at Thursday here. Some of the line moves that have come through the marketplace. A lot of small moves mostly. I'm seeing some money come in on Andrew Cashner and the Texas Rangers against the Kansas City Royals. I just talked about it. I don't like the Royals, but Danny Duffy, he's off to a better start than the numbers would suggest. He has a higher swinging strike rate than last year, but a lower strikeout rate. I think there's some upside there with him. And as I just said, in looking at the Rangers, I don't like anything about what they've done so far this year. I think Duffy's a good matchup against the Rangers. That is a play I like a little bit tonight. It wouldn't be my top play, but I do think that the Royals have some value this evening. A big move on Zach Davies, who's going up against Carlos Martinez here in this one. Look, Zach Davies is the guy that I really, really liked coming into the season. He's a big reason why I like the Brewers, who have played pretty well in spite of him here. I'm not ready to buy into Zach Davies, but I'm certainly not selling my stock either. Fourth lowest average exit velocity this season on his batted balls. It's a control problem for him. You know, I wrote a lot more about this in my picks analysis piece, so if you get a chance to check that out, please do. But Davies hasn't been able to throw his secondaries as much because he hasn't been ahead in the count. And this is a guy that wants to work the edges with the fastball, but his out pitches are his off-speed stuff. And when you work behind in the count, you can't throw those. So it's harder to throw those fastballs on the black because you're behind in the count. If you don't get a call, and the Brewers don't have very strong pitch framers right now so far this season, if you're not getting those calls on the edges, you know, that 2-1 to 3-1 difference is huge. Or 1-1, you know, if you go 1-2, it's great. If you go 2-1, you're in trouble. So it's been a lot of things for Davies here. I think there's still upside left, and I'm intrigued to see what happens here with the market backing him. I don't know if this is a Carlos Martinez fade. I don't know if it's a fade of the Cardinals bullpen, which had a lot of work in that series against the Pirates. And I don't know if it's a Cardinals fade on the offense. But I was really surprised to see that move, surprised to see people buying into Zach Davies. And hopefully for his sake, he can get this thing figured out. Seeing a pretty big move here against James Paxton, which I don't really get this. I mean, Paxton in 22 innings hasn't given up, or 21 innings hasn't given up a run. Yes, that's unsustainable. But 22-4 strikeout to walk ratio. You know, the A's hit a lot of mistakes. Paxton's not making a lot of mistakes. So I don't really get the desire to back Cesar Valdez, who's making his first major league appearance since 2010. Good numbers at AAA Fresno last year in the Astros organization, but that's a move I don't really get. I'm not saying I would lay Paxton minus 140, minus 145, but sometimes the market does some strange things, and it kind of leaves you scratching your head a little bit. And, you know, it's good to just explain these things and talk through them a little bit and see what you can figure out. So my pick for Thursday here, and again, like I said, I do like the Royals a little bit, but my favorite pick for Thursday night, the Cincinnati Reds. I'm going to look to back Scott Feldman going up against the Baltimore Orioles and Wade Miley. This number started moving around on us a little bit. I liked it more at Cincinnati plus 115. It's plus 110, plus 107 now, but let's take a look at a deeper look here at Wade Miley. So Miley struck out 13 over 11 innings. He's only given up 3 runs on 6 hits, but there are some massive, massive signs of regression for Wade Miley. A 158 batting average against with a 208 BABIP against, but a lot of hard pull side contact. Guys generally hit very, very well with hard pull side contact. They're not going to carry a 208 BABIP against. Miley, some arsenal changes there for him. Fewer changeups, more two-seam fastballs, but his swinging strike rate just 7%. So the fact that he's struck out 13 in 11 innings, not sustainable at all if you're not missing bats. I mean, I think the league average swinging strike rate is in the high eights, close to 9%, and he's at 7%. That strikeout spike coming back to earth very, very quickly. Zone contact percentage of 96.4%. When guys are hitting balls in the strike zone, that means hard contact. That means things that they can do damage with. When guys are making contact outside the zone, that's when you get weak ground balls, bloopers, lazy fly balls, all that stuff. If guys are teeing off in the zone, you're not going to have success. You need swings and misses in the strike zone, whether you're getting away with a mistake or you're sequencing well to keep guys off balance. You need to have a decent zone contact rate, which is, I mean, look, and I say decent, it's probably 89, 90% in terms of zone contact. Miley in his career, about 92. 96.4, he's going to get hit hard here at some point. I like to think it could be today. Regression is coming. The Reds lineup is doing a lot of good things. So I like Cincinnati and Scott Feldman catching plus money at home here against the Baltimore Orioles tonight. This is a straight fade of Wade Miley, and I think this is a pretty good play. And even if it loses, a play that I would make 10 times out of 10. So for today's sabermetrics stat, I want to talk a little bit about defensive metrics. I want to talk about defensive runs saved. It's a statistic created by the Fielding Bible. It rates players on a scale of above average or below average defense, where zero is the baseline, zero is perfectly average. Now, in terms of defensive runs saved, it takes some time for this sample size to be significant. It's not significant yet. It probably won't be until about June or July or so. It's why I haven't used it to this point, because there's just not a whole lot of value in it. But predominantly, it's a plus-minus system of plays made. What this is it's batted ball data tracked by humans. Now, we'll see what kinds of advances there are with defensive metrics when it comes to StatCast. It's one of the last great frontiers of Major League Baseball statistics is defense. You know, everyone's trying to figure out the best way to calculate defensive value. With StatCast, exit velocities, distance traveled, cruising speed, sprint speed, first step, all that type of stuff, defensive metrics are better than they've ever been. But a lot of that data is proprietary. A lot of it is held onto by teams in the league. So we're still left to go with defensive runs saved. Like I said, this is the human element. So there is human error involved. But as we get deeper into the season, you can start to use these defensive runs saved metrics to your advantage. You've got a pitch to contact starter. You know, that's probably not going to be incorporated into the line properly if he's got a good defense. Even if it's a strikeout guy, but he's got a bad defense, strikeout guys tend to allow a lot of hard contact because they throw hard. You know, they have devastating secondary pitches, but sometimes they throw a spinner in there, slider that gets hit hard. You know, guy's geared up for 95. It speeds the bat head up. He gets out in front, rips the ball to the pull side. So defensive metrics are very important. I've done some research into looking at how they're incorporated into totals. A lot of times they're not incorporated as well as they should be. So defensive runs saved, it's not significant yet, but it will be as we go forward. Like I said, it's a plus-minus system. It's based on past plays. You know, if this is a play that's made 65% of the time and a guy makes it, it rounds up to a +1 defensive run saved. You know, if it's a play that's made 65% of the time and a guy doesn't make it, that's rounded down to a -1 defensive run saved. So, you know, that's a statistic that you can look to use to your advantage. And again, keep in mind here, if it's a play that's made, you know, let me rephrase what I said. If it's made 65% of the time, it's 0.35 runs defensive run saved. So it's not rounded anywhere. You know, it wouldn't be rounded up. So that's what keeps the plus minus system under control. And I apologize for any confusion there with that. There's great write-ups over in the glossary at FanGraphs about the defensive metrics. So if what I said is a little bit confusing, and certainly it could be, just head on over to the glossary and check that out. Don't think defense is accurately paid attention to later on in the year. You know, we see a lot of line moves based on the ERA and XFIP discrepancies, things of that sort. But I think defensive metrics are very, very important. And like I said, context means so much. You know, and I look to provide a lot of context. That's why when I write that picks analysis piece, it's so damn long, because I want to give you the context. I could explain to you line moves. I could explain to you, you know, basic things as to why a play makes sense. But I want to give you the full picture. And defensive metrics have been improving. They give us a full picture. And I think those are things that you can really look to incorporate in your handicapping. All right, so let's take a look at the weekend ahead here. A few series that are on my radar. Boston, Baltimore, the first one. You've got Drew Pomerantz and Alec Asher in the first game. Steven Wright, Dylan Bundy, Eduardo Rodriguez, Kevin Gausman the rest of the way. Porcello struggling, as I mentioned. David Price, he's had his rehab scaled back a little bit. So the three guys going in this series for Boston really need to get it going. Steven Wright has allowed a ton of high-velocity contact this year. Drew Pomerantz shut down the Orioles, in his first start. Steven Wright got rocked in his start against them. How are adjustments made? You know, that's something that I always look for, is when you've got a pitcher that's facing a team for a second straight time, or maybe a second time in three trips around the rotation, what adjustments get made? You know, what can they do differently? And, of course, you have some of that on the Baltimore side as well, but it's especially interesting on the Boston side because you've got this Baltimore lineup that hits a lot of mistakes. If Steven Wright makes a lot of mistakes, they're going to get hit hard. Drew Pomerantz, a lefty, you know, facing a lot of right-handed power hitters, what happens with that situation? How about the Baltimore bullpen, though? No Zach Britton here, as we know. That's a tough series to handicap. I think Baltimore has the starting pitching edge in two of these three games, to be sure. So if you want to look at a Baltimore series price, I think that's worthwhile. But I really want to see how these Boston starters start to settle in a little bit, or if they do. San Francisco goes to Colorado here. You got Johnny Cueto, Tyler Chatwood in the first one. Matt Moore, Antonio Senzatella in the second one. Jeff Samardzija, Kyle Freeland in the third one. Matt Moore's allowed a lot of high exit velocity contact. But Antonio Senzatella, a guy I talked about on Monday's show, a two-pitch pitcher predominantly. As I said, first time through the league, he may have some success because he's got good fastball command, enough on that slider to get by. But he's facing the Giants for the second time now. So while I have concerns about Moore and the exit velocity on Saturday, I would look to back the Giants there because Senzatella, facing a lineup for the second time, he doesn't have the depth in his arsenal, doesn't have that third pitch. San Francisco's picked up some tendencies. You know, they had the best offensive performance of anybody against him so far as the advanced reports are getting a little bit better. Those are things that you want to look at. You know, it's a situationally based play, and I think that's a good one for Saturday. So I'd look to back the Giants there in that one. Colorado's a regression candidate as it is. They're tied for first with a negative run differential. Detroit, they're now minus 14 in run differential, yet they're first in the AL Central. So, you know, you look for those regression tendencies where you can find them. And I think at the very least, we've got a good play on Saturday for San Francisco. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Giants go out there and win this series, especially if they're able to pick up that Saturday game. Toronto goes out west to Anaheim to take on the Angels. Long trip for a Toronto team that's really in the tank right now. But what's interesting to me about this series is the starting pitching matchups. Matt Latos gets the ball in the first one. He'll take on Alex Meyer. This is a Friday night game. Casey Lawrence and Tyler Skaggs on Saturday. Marcus Stroman, Jesse Chavez on Sunday, and then a wraparound here with Francisco Liriano, Ricky Nolasco on Monday. Nolasco took some money in his last start. People do not want to back Liriano, so that's something we can look at for Monday. But the Jays really need some starting rotation help. Aaron Sanchez and Jay Happ both out right now. Latos and Lawrence are the two replacements. I'm curious to see how the Jays fare with this long trip. You know, you got to go out there, play a wraparound. Guys don't like four-game series. This has been a criticism from players for a while now. They just don't like it. You know, facing the same team four straight times, anytime you get a four-game series, at least one of them is going to be a day game. In this case, Sunday is a day game with a 3:30 start time, and then I believe Monday is a late game. So that's a very tricky situational spot for Toronto. It's just not a good time for a team to be going out west for the most part. Now, that being said, you know, for Toronto here, you've got the Maple Leafs in the playoffs for making a good run for the first time in a long time. Maybe it's good to get away from that Toronto media market. The Canadian sports media markets can be very, very difficult on teams because it's a very passionate fan base up there. There's a lot of national pride. They want their teams to do well. The Blue Jays have nowhere to hide at home, even with the Maple Leafs playing as well as they are. So maybe going out west is a decent thing. You know, sometimes those road trips to bond, get away from familial obligations, all that type of stuff can be good for a team. But I think with what's going on with Toronto right now, with the pitching injuries and the lack of offense, going to a park where offense is really suppressed, I just don't think it's a good spot for Toronto at all. And we'll have to see what the lines look like here throughout these series, or throughout these games, I should say. One more series to look at here, Washington and the New York Mets. Tanner Roark, Jacob deGrom in the first one. Gio Gonzalez, Matt Harvey in the second one. Max Scherzer, Zach Wheeler on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. Big series, two top dogs in the NL East, good pitching matchups, but I want to focus on something else here. We always want to look at the big picture, right? So as I said, on Sunday, Washington and the Mets are the late game, Scherzer and Zach Wheeler. So Washington, by the time they take care of their media obligations, get this game done, usually Sunday Night Baseball games take a little bit longer. It'll be a three-hour game. Washington gets to LaGuardia, JFK, wherever they're flying out of, probably around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. They have to fly out to Colorado. Massive, massive fade spot of the Washington Nationals on Monday. I'll try to come up with a different play for the bettors box on Monday, but right now, as long as things shake out the way they should, the Colorado Rockies will be Monday's play. And I tell you this because I want you to jump on the overnight line for this one because I think this line's going to go up. You've got a long trip out to the thin air, and Joe Ross making his second start of the season. And he pitched well against Atlanta the other night. He's got to go to Colorado. Colorado is a very unique pitching environment. It can be tough to grip the ball. Things don't spin the same way in the thin air. He's trying to, you know, get a feel for all of his stuff, get a feel for his command. He throws two pitches. If his command is off with either his fastball or his slider, he's screwed. He's totally dicked. And he's got to go and pitch in the thin air on Monday in his second start of the year. This may end up being one of my favorite plays of the season. We'll see if the line shakes out the way we hope it does. But I would look to play the overnight because I think that line moves for Washington and Colorado on Monday. Maybe it'll be built into the line a little bit. I don't think it'll be built into the line enough with the context of the whole Joe Ross angle. But Colorado on Monday, definitely a play that I'm looking at. And that's really why I wanted to mention that series that's coming up here this weekend. So as you know, coming up on Monday, the Monday mailbag and the bettors box, please send me those Monday mailbag questions. I would love to hear from you with some thoughts. I already have one good one from MG86 on Twitter, but if we can send some more, I really appreciate that. Our Tuesday takeover show looks like we'll have Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. So on Tuesday, we'll look at the NFL draft, talk about some of the props that are out there, and then maybe, you know, some stuff on some of the teams in the NFL, maybe some of the teams that that Joe likes heading into next season. But we'll get some football talk on the show on Tuesday. And then Thursday, again, another edition of the Bettors Box. One other thing I want to point your way here. I'm hoping that our Tuesday, May 2nd show will be our Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks preview show with Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com. Hoping to get some horse racing talk there. So that should be our May 2nd show. I know we've had some listeners asking about getting some stuff on the ponies on the show. So that'll be something for you to look forward to here in the long term. But that'll do it for today. Remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the bettors box. And I will talk to you again on Monday.